Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPod. No, wait, no, it's more iPhone and iPad gaming podcast. I'm your host, Will Wilson, and with me is Tracy Erickson
Hi.
and John Jordan.
How long have you been doing this, Will? And you keep getting the podcast wrong.
Windows Phone 7 podcast.
Welcome to the Java Mobile and Brew podcast.
The date is February 10th, 1997, and we're here talking about Half-Life.
WAP gaming.
WAP gaming.
We can do that, couldn't we? We could do like a... On April the 1st, we could do a...
Sorry, guys, I'm going to have to cut this this recording as we've run out of space on the 8 megabyte internal storage. we're recording in WAV. this is the iPhone and iPad gaming podcast. You haven't switched back in time. You haven't slept too long. And let's head into the news.
News!
Okay, first up on the news is that some non-holiday card selling event is happening very soon on the 15th. And lots of people are having a big old sale.
On the 15th?
14th, 13th. You know, I don't
You're doing really well this week.
Valentine's Day is just such a... Oh, I gave it away now. It's Valentine's Day. Damn it.
We know you're not sending any cards.
You ruined the surprise.
Well, you know, Valentine's Day for me is just a mournful sit staring at...
Mournful? God.
Staring at a montage of photos to the soundtrack of Bright Eyes. No, it's... Well, I don't recognize it as a genuine day. Anyway, enough about me. What am I talking about? There's lots of sales going on, or rather, some sales have started and finished already by the time of recording, and others have just started, and others are halfway in their sale. It's a bit of a mess, basically.
Yeah.
It also feels a bit like it's just like any opportunity to have a sale from the major publishers is seized upon. So
it really is, isn't it? It's just kind of like, yeah. And the weird thing was like, you know, EA did it first, but for 2 days, nothing at all to do with Valentine's, like the week before Valentine's
and
Day.
And only in the US, I think, wasn't it?
And it was a hilariously titled sale, I Heart 99 Cents. it's so weird. This thing, you know, as someone, you know, I play console games and PC games too. You don't see this. It's so bizarre to me. You don't see, like, you wouldn't see, you know, Epic drop the price of Gears of War all of a sudden. I mean, I know it's totally, they're totally different, but it just, you know, these sales just pop up on the App Store. And I still, even now that it's been 3 years since the App Store has been around, I still think it's kind of weird.
I mean, the direct comparison, I guess, is more like sort of, I don't know, Xbox Live Arcade or Steam, but I've just had a look on Steam and they haven't got any Valentine's Day stuff. It's pretty much business as normal. Although you never know, it's still not actually that near Valentine's Day. I mean, it's at least 5 days away.
That's what's so weird. Like, why? I mean, I get like Namco has a week long sale, so their sale ends the day after the holiday. So that makes sense. I really don't understand what EA was doing with a 2 day sale. Like, I don't understand. Like, so you do the sale, you do a 2 day sale, and it's a Valentine's sale. Wouldn't you want to do it on Valentine's Day?
Well, I can understand why you want a bit of a lead up, because you obviously they want to. If you just do a sale for a day, it doesn't give you enough time to go up the charts. So you do want to do it. If you're doing sales or even putting games free, you do want to do it for a couple of, you know, probably like 2 or 3 days to give it the impact. I just kind of think from a biz point of view, they must still be generating more money doing it this way. You know, because if they wouldn't be doing it, they wouldn't be doing it as a loss leader. EA and Gameloft wouldn't be anyway. I think there's a certain point when EA and Gameloft start doing it, then the other guys kind of have to do it as well. But I still think it's a case where they must still be making, they must be generating extra revenue on it. But I'm just amazed that people haven't got all EA's games, because they've done it like, you know, it's like the third or fourth time now, isn't it?
in about 3 days.
They've done the same, but they've done the same games. So yeah. Obviously, you've got new people coming on all the time, and that's the other thing that obviously Verizon have just launched its iPhones out this week. Mm-hmm. So there's you could argue that there's another 500,000 people who've just not 500,000.
Was that before or was that during that sale as well, or was it after?
Because I think it was about the day. It was all Tracy. You'd know when was it? It was like Monday or Tuesday. The Verizon iPhones went out.
Right, exactly.
And of course, this EA sale was US only, despite being Valentine's Day being recognised pretty much all over the Western world, at least, and except by me, as we've already gathered. Yeah. So actually, and then of course we were all expecting Gameloft to react, and they did with a 14-day sale. Maybe it was just for the Verizon launch.
I didn't just notice that World of Goo's just done 59p as well.
Yeah.
Oh, great. That's one of those ones where they just annoy everyone who just bought it. Because you don't expect them to do it.
It's been dropping in price, though, in World of Goo.
It has, that's right. Yeah,
quite regularly. And, I mean, they've just got into the news, haven't they? Like yesterday or the day before, saying about like the sales being much better than PC and Wii. So I guess they're still in the public mind, and then they thought maybe, you know, I don't know. Can't second guess them. Anyway, should we move on from sales? We're not going to do a roundup of the games because they're all on the site and it'll take ages.
Yeah.
I think I am going to write up a special article tomorrow just trying to summarize everything that's on sale and all the review links. And
but half of them won't be on sale by that page. Stage, won't they?
We'll see.
Well, cheers for John for reminding us about the Verizon.
Yeah.
Release, because that completely explains it. So I feel smarter as a result. Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
I didn't come up with it. I got it off someone else. So it's not like...
Right. Let's go on to the next news story, and it's everyone's favorite game featuring the Eco Warriors. Well, they're not really Eco Warriors. They're more just sort of
Captain Planet.
Well, no, the other one. The one with the slightly harmless blue creatures. Who wear hats and a Belgium.
Oh.
yes. Smurfs Village.
The Smurfs.
Smurfs Village. Great story. Great tagline from Mark. What a Smurf. it's another story about someone spending copious amounts of dollars on Smurfberries, which have now basically, in my mind now, I'm starting to replace Smurfberries with like other sort of addictive substances. Someone, like an 8-year-old, racked up a $1,400 bill buying Smurfberries. This is despite a report last 2 months ago where someone did something similar, where the child kept buying real items for real money. Well, no, fake items for real money. It's worse. And Capcom, as a response, put lots of warnings everywhere on the app description, saying you can change settings. We ran a story showing people how you can change settings so you can prevent your children from buying accidentally. But it's happened again. It's a second grader from Arlington. I don't know which Arlington. There's quite a few Arlingtons, isn't there, in America?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Including a cemetery.
Oh, yeah. No, actually, there's more than one child. I'm reading ahead of this story. Rockville, 8-year-old Madison from Rockville, spent $1,400. Second grader from Arlington spent $150 on Tapsu. it's basically just like this amalgamation of all these in-app purchasing apps that have basically ended up costing the parents quite a little bit. It's still going on. Do you think Apple should put a bit more emphasis on the fact that there are parental controls on the iPod Touch and stuff? Because to be fair, unless you go into the settings menu, which isn't the first place people go because it's so well laid out, then you're not going to know about these sort of things, are you?
I mean, it's just like all these things, you know, the parental controls, you know, well, it was always the thing that the parents have to get the kids to show how the parental controls work. I mean, that legally, I guess you have to have it there, but it's never, you know, you'll always get these stories. I mean, it's just going to happen more and more because obviously more people are doing, in-app purchases. I guess the bigger thing would be probably that the credit card people will put some sort of pressure on Apple, or not just Apple, any of these digital stores to have some sort of limit where maybe if it was more than $50 or something, you know, or certainly $100,
yeah.
Because I mean, obviously, it's ridiculous that someone would do it. Like, you know, if suddenly you did like $1,000 or that many dollars on a credit card, and it was like an odd thing, then you know they obviously have teams who look for fraud and stuff, so they should be kind of picking it up on that kind of basis. But it's going to be,
I absolutely agree with everything you just said, and I would just add to it, I think the developer has a responsibility to not provide in-app purchases that are of a high value. Why do you need to do in-app purchases that are worth, you know, £60?
The
average person isn't going to be purchasing that. I think if you I don't think there should be any sort of like rule where Apple comes and says, you can't have in-app purchases past a certain price. I think it's a sort of self-policing thing and looking at a game like Smurfs Village and saying, you know what, this is geared for kids. So perhaps if we limit, make the highest value in-app purchase capped out at like, you know, £15, I think that's reasonable enough. I don't understand, and this is, I would be very interested to see the numbers, you know, on this.
Oh, well,
I really doubt that.
I can tell you this, Tracy.
What?
I can. It's gonna be my next thing. I've got two comments on this. One of which is I just interviewed the guy behind the Chop Chop game series.
Oh yeah.
Which is obviously a predominantly kid-based kind of cutie kind of arcade game thing. And they're working on a freemium game, and he specifically said, because they're really looking to target kind of kids and kind of young teenagers. So their freemium game, and they're going to do in-app purchases, you know, are specifically going to be small transactions.
Mm-hmm.
So people can't get this kind of accidental $50 thing. So, you know, in some ways that's kind of positive for your, you know, I obviously kind of agree with that for the kids stuff. But equally, I also interviewed the guy, the guys from Get Set Games who do Mega Jump. And they've in the last month, they've increased their in-app purchases to make them more expensive. So now they've got a new range from $25 up to $95
or
$99. Oh. I interviewed him about it. And obviously the game's good. It's done like 10 million, 11 million downloads now. But you're basically buying in-game currency to unlock stuff faster and get better items and stuff. And I was saying, you know, do people really spend that amount of money, you know, like $100 on these on this, because originally the game was 99 cents back when they released it. And he was like, well, obviously that's not a lot of people do that, but he said that's one of our biggest revenue streams now, because obviously you don't need many people to spend that amount of money. So developers are being stretched both ways, because as soon as you do put those big amounts in, people do use them. So
the argument
is whether some of those people are doing it accidentally, or I mean, it is specifically if you have a game that you know kids are going to be playing, then obviously there is an issue there. But I don't think there is no conclusion. I don't think that anyone can draw. I just think there will be some stories like this will just bobble on for a while.
I think you're right. I think there will always be stories like this, but I do think that the conclusion with specific regards to this game is that Capcom needs to eliminate those high-end app purchases.
I mean,
I think you're absolutely right. I agree with you. I don't think we can extrapolate to all freemium games in general, but this is the second time that this game has popped up in the news for this very same reason. And this is a call for Capcom to stop just releasing announcements saying we're sorry and we're working on, you know, that we're you know, and add a little note and actually drop the price of those in-app purchases. There's no need clearly for 99 cent or for $99 in-app purchases in Smurfs Village. I think they would make plenty of money still having a $20 in-app purchase.
Does anyone know how big is the biggest in-app purchase for Smurf? You're our Smurf expert, Will.
I am the Smurf expert. It is, £60.
Oh,
around $90. Let me check. It's
that's more than $100.
It's around €90.
But even so, that kid has obviously done like, you know, even if he's choosing the biggest option, he's done
it quite a few times.
Yeah, exactly.
€100 and £60. Wow, that's a bad exchange rate.
I mean, this is an interesting problem, right? Because this is a new problem, when it comes to mobile handsets. I mean, you didn't hand your Java, you know, your crappy Java Nokia.
Crappy. Yeah.
So I mean, it's kind of an interesting. I do think that there's a little bit of, you know, at the end of the day, it's the parents' responsibility. It's their phone, and you know, if I would be a little bit, you know, concerned about just handing my phone off to a kid, because it's like, well, you know, what are they going to do with it? Yeah, I mean,
it could be the iPod Touch though, and I mean, iPod Touches are very popular with kids. I know, for instance,
yes, I stand corrected. Yes, that's true. That is true.
But of course,
Then you could just turn off the Wi-Fi. Again, I mean, I think the only way to prevent. Go ahead.
You need Wi-Fi, Tracy, for some of these games, particularly things like Smurf Village that are social. So.
Well, then the question, I don't know. I guess that ultimately at the end of the day, I think the primary responsibility is on whoever's phone or device it is. So if you don't want to risk, let's say you have a 3-year-old that wants to play Smurfs Village, well, you need to make sure that they're not, you know, turn off. If it requires Wi-Fi, then maybe you need to reconsider having a young kid play it. Or two, if it doesn't require a connection, then figure out a way that they can play it so that you don't put your credit card at risk. Or just create an account that doesn't have a credit card attached.
The other thing would be that Apple could introduce some sort of, you know, some infrastructure kind of wallet thing that you can load up a wallet of a certain amount and then connect that to an iTunes account. So it's not an open-ended thing. And probably that's where people will go because that makes it easier for people who don't have credit cards or debit cards in the developing world anyway, so you can load it up with credit. So and actually, going back to Java stuff, you did get, you know, people, they were using reverse premium SMSs, and people were still getting, you know, people were getting charged large sums of money they didn't really realise. I mean, that was a bit more to the subscription, but there's always been issues with these kind of open-ended kind of, what they call them, kind of frictionless payment systems.
Difficult
topic. I think you're right, John. I don't think there is necessarily a clear answer.
Before we move on to a related link, of course, if you are interested in checking out Smurfs Village, then there's a special Valentine's update, which which allows you to tap Smurfette for free. I didn't get a single complaint about that paragraph. I was really expecting there's one commentator who always comes in and complains whenever I do anything slightly risque, and I went overboard with that paragraph, and no mention, no one picked up on it. It was great.
That's good.
She's normally paid, like you normally have to pay money to have her.
Oh my god.
It's a special Valentine's Day treat. And by the way, if you do tap her, then she gives experience. So there you go. talking of overpriced peripherals, the iControl pad has a price tag, and it's $75. The iControl pad is, of course, the thing that you jam your iPhone into, or I guess iPod Touch. You jam it into, and it's got physical buttons. It's not really very useful if you don't have a jailbroken phone that runs emulation software, or indeed any software which doesn't support it, which is quite a lot of software at the moment. But, £75. It's quite a lot. No response to that. That's pretty much, I'm guessing, the silence is agreement.
Equally, it's one of those things that obviously, if someone was going to make a million of them, you could get the price down quite a lot. But I don't really know very much about them, but they're kind of a bunch of hobbyists, aren't they, effectively? So they're probably going to, initially, they're going to have to do a run, probably like hand build them or something, or do a run of a couple of hundred. So you have to charge a lot. And there's some people who, like we've been saying with in-app purchases, some people will, if they decide they want it, will buy it, even if we think it's massively over expensive. So it's not necessarily, you want to charge a lot at the beginning. I mean, same thing like when consoles come out, you know, they almost want to charge, they know, you know, 3DS, if it was $1,000, they know they'd sell some, but so it's not necessarily bad. I mean, I just kind of think, I just don't understand the idea of that kind of stuff, really. You know, it's going completely against what Apple has designed, isn't it? So,
yeah. Well, here's a good one. Talking of physical controllers on portable gaming devices, there's a debate raging, I should say. It's raging, indeed. John Carmack's come out this week and has said essentially that the 3DS and the next generation portable are the last generation of dedicated gaming console, well, portable gaming consoles, because of the rise of the smartphone and the rise of smartphone gaming. People don't, in his view, if someone had the option of playing games that maybe they're not really like really want to play, but sort of want to play, you know, sort of the parkour gamers playing Angry Birds kind of thing. But they only had it on one device. It would be preferable to having two devices, one for games and one for games, but also as a phone. Do you see that being the future? Do you see this being the last generation of dedicated portable gaming consoles? Do you agree with Carmack?
Well, he's a pretty smart guy, and
Tracy's had contact with him, so
He's actually really nice too. Mm. You know, I always hesitate on these sorts of really general statements because you just never know where the industry is going to be 4 or 5 years down the line. I think it's such a big general thing to say, but I think it is heading down that direction. I think people don't want to carry multiple devices. The way I view, you know, as someone, I loved the Game Boy Advance, for example. And that was, you know, the SP was something that you could slip in your back pocket and take with you whenever you went somewhere. It was easy to use. I don't feel that that is so much the case with 3DS, and certainly NGP is pretty bulky. I just don't see a lot of people playing them in a handheld capacity, playing it on a bus or playing it, you know, just moving around. I see those more as portable consoles. So you would take one of those with you if you were going on a trip, and you know, you wanted to be able to have games with you when you were on vacation. Hmm. And so I think that's fundamentally different than why we've seen iPhone and now Android and a little bit on Windows Phone 7, why those have become so popular, because they're so accessible. It's not about casual versus hardcore, because there's a range of those sorts of experiences on the App Store, on these other smartphones. It's about whether or not you have a game in your pocket and you can just pull it out and be able to play that for 5 minutes and be able to interrupt it and put it back in your pocket. And I think that in that regard, the handhelds from Nintendo and Sony are not a good solution. And for the vast majority of people, yeah, there's always, you know, 3DS is going to be, you know, I predict that it's going to be a success. I think NGP will have its audience. They will make money for both of those companies. But they're dealing with a much more limited audience. Their potential consumer is a smaller group than, say, you know, iPhone or Android, where, you know, you have people that are going to pick up these devices that don't even have gaming in mind, but then will say, oh yeah, I can, what's this Angry Birds game? I'll pick it up. I'll play it. It's much easier. They're just more accessible. So that's why I hesitate to say, well, you know, the handhelds are going to be gone, period. Because I think, you know, there's always going to be a desire to have dedicated gaming machines. It's just a matter of whether or not companies are willing to pursue that sort of strategy, you know, because at the end of the day, they're businesses. They want to make as much money as possible. And clearly where the industry is heading is toward connected devices. And the only way of doing that on a portable is to connect to the mobile networks, which, you know, moving forward is going to be LTE and 4G. So, you know, what I think is interesting is if you look at NGP, you know, there's now talk, because Sony had initially announced this device as, oh, it's going to have 3G support. It's going to connect in with these mobile networks, but they've kind of backtracked from that. So, you know, now it's looking like there's going to be two different versions of the handheld, which is confusing. And then the 3G support is not actually going to come, is only confirmed for Japan. So there's, in the US, there may not even be a 3G configuration of NGP available to US consumers. So that sort of, you know, what that tells me is, you know, as a hardcore gamer, that's a little bit disappointing, because you want to have that constant connectivity. But from a business perspective, it tells me that Sony thinks that they can actually run this business, this portable, you know, gaming platform without that feature. So there's clearly some, they think that they can get some life out of, that they can build this platform without the need of having that telephony. So I'm a little, I agree with Carmack's take on it, but I also think that it might be a little bit, I think that could be a little bit further down the line.
I mean, I think, I guess the reason it's an interesting or discussion point at the moment is we're kind of in a crossover point. We're obviously, we've got the new generation of the, what would have been the old portable kind of gaming consoles coming out now. So obviously kind of 3DS, but when the DS came out, obviously mobile, you didn't have iPhone. So this is the first time we've kind of seen how the these two different, there's one model's kind of risen up and one model is kind of like being, you know, and it's kind of collided with this accepted model. And obviously the administrator said the point is you'll get a slightly confused kind of combination of the two things going forward. I guess it, I mean, I think the thing with, that kind of goes against kind of Carmack's thing is that people always seem to be prepared to pay for a better experience. So, you know, yeah. Well, I guess we'll see with the NGP, obviously there's no pricing announcement or anything like that, but that's obviously, you know, an incredibly complicated bit of kit that will, you know, if you want to run those type of games will be, you know, probably won't be much competition there. So, but most people don't want that. Most people just want to play an Angry Birds type thing. So there's, whereas before, right. If you wanted to play an Angry Birds thing, you kind of had to have a DS on the go. So I think the things kind of muddle up a little bit. I think there'll always be a place for everything.
You know what I think, though, to support Carmack's, you know, argument, I would say Sony is in a way almost betting against themselves with NGP, because here, you know, along with, you know, they have a sort of three-pronged strategy when it comes to portables. They have NGP, which is their dedicated hardcore machine that they're hoping people are going to be willing to spend $350 to get those, you know, high-end, top-of-the-line experiences. Then they have, you know, sort of the low-end multi-platform approach with PlayStation Suite on Android with the emulated PlayStation 1 games. Mm. And then they have the Xperia Play, which is essentially a stripped down NGP with the ability to make calls. So it's like, I think this is where Carmack is saying the industry is heading toward portables that are also smartphones, because even Sony is admitting that they're not going to be able to, you know, essentially reach the big numbers that they would like to reach with consumers by just doing a dedicated portable. They have to do, you know, what's essentially a PlayStation phone in order to get the huge numbers that they want to support that business. I'm very curious to see how all of this plays out for Sony, because I think each of these prongs to their strategy sound really good, but at the end of the day, I don't think all of them are going to work. I think, for example, like the PlayStation Suite, which is unfortunately only going to be on Android, is just an emulation. You know, for example, they were showing off screenshots of Cool Borders running on an Android phone, and it had four shoulder buttons emulated in the top two corners. It had two analog sticks. It had four buttons. I mean, it's like, how in the world are you going to control a game like that? Mm. You know, so it's like, it's a tough, you know, I think, but then at the end of the day, it's like, are those really the sort of experiences that people on an Android or any other touchscreen smartphone device really wanting? I think it goes to what you were saying, John, is that most people want to play kind of quick games like Angry Birds. So it really kind of becomes the platforms diverge. So it's like you have smartphones, which are a lot more accessible, not necessarily casual all the time, because games like Dead Space work. But then you have more robust experiences that are almost like blockbuster films that are on these portables. So it'll be very interesting to see whether or not, you know, do those start to collide in a more, you know, do those coalesce into a single platform in the next 10 years, or do they diverge more?
Well,
I think personally, I think also going from from our friend Keith, what he was his university degree project. I think that this three-pronged attack could actually damage the PlayStation brand as well in a way, especially if the Xperia Play ends, because it's not got amazing specs. It's got pretty good specs, for, as far as I know from the rumors, but it's not like the high-end, you know, classy, is sort of NGP sort of style PlayStation that we sort of know. I guess that's why they've called it Xperia Play rather than PlayStation Phone. But it's just this sort of like, and the PlayStation Suite as well, it, as you were saying, it's probably going to be quite a clumsy thing to use in practice. And I mean, their whole reputation prior to and including the PS3 was built on, like, you know, classy looking systems, can do like modern technology, has DVD player built in, Blu-ray player built in, you know, kind of thing. And it's kind of, they're kind of risking it with three-pronged attack. They're trying to dilute the message that their brand takes as well.
What do you think, John?
Say again?
What do you think, John?
It just kind of reminded me when PSP came out, but when they launched the PlayStation Network, you could actually, I mean, no one, I did, but you could actually buy PlayStation 1 games for your PSP then. And I bought a couple. I mean, they were unplayable. It was, you know, absolutely ridiculous. It was just completely, one of them was like a light gun game. I mean, but I think the more general point, going back to the Carmack thing, is for most people, I think the device is going to matter less and less. You're kind of, what you're seeing now is while there'll be, you know, everything's pretty much of a certain power. But it's, you know, it's a terrible buzzword. It's like, it's kind of these cloud-based services that are going to be far more important. So, I mean, this week, I don't think it's necessarily massively significant, but HTC have invested $40 million in online, the streaming game service. So, you know, obviously the whole point of stuff like OnLive and those other platforms is you don't need particularly specific hardware. You just have a service, and if you're near enough a server and you have a good network, you effectively stream the video footage of the game and use your device as a screen. So in that situation, the hardware you've got in your pocket doesn't matter at all, as long as it's got good enough connection and you can decode the video fast enough and send back, you know, your controls.
Well, that's a whole other kettle of fish.
Yeah,
you're just about to open, so I'm gonna pass in here.
Should we shut that one? Should we nail it?
We'll nail it back down for another week. I think.
For another week.
Okay. Well, that's it for news. I'm sorry it was so short. Hang on a moment. We should really pay a visit to the rumor miner, because we haven't said hello for ages. Well, when I say hello, I mean not actually say hello to him, because he's a freaky murderous bastard, but. We'll just go into his tunnels.
Hello, Will.
No, not now.
Rimmer. Rimmer.
Ah. That's an interesting... sorry, no, go on, Tracy. I was going to do the setup, but you instantly went into it. Yes. Yeah, I can't think of one. Let's go straight into it.
We have three rumors, and what's interesting about these rumors this week is there's one that is kind of like a bad news for a company, but I actually think is good news for gamers. And then there is another that is a positive announcement. It's a new game, and you think you would be really excited, but it's actually kind of a downer because expectations are probably going to be really low.
Cooking Mama 4? you know,
Cooking Mama!
So I'm quite looking forward to that.
So which do you want first? The good news that's actually bad, or the bad news that's actually good?
It's good news that's actually bad.
Good news that's actually bad. Sega is going to be unveiling a new racing game for iPhone and iPod Touch during Game Developers Conference.
That's good news.
Have you played a Sega game recently, Will?
That's bad news.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it might be like Sega All-Stars Racing, or maybe it's like Super Monkey Ball Racing or so. I mean, it could be, you know, a good game that's coming, or maybe it's Outrun. You know, I don't want to get anybody's hopes up. I mean, the last last couple years of games from iPhone and iPod Touch games from Sega have been, on the whole, pretty deplorable. The only exceptions have been Sonic the Hedgehog 4, which was well done. Wasn't great, but they did a nice job with it, I thought. And
Kingdom Conquest wasn't too bad.
Yeah, Kingdom Conquest was, I'd say, I think that's on at least on our site, it's their highest rated game.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just worry that they're going to announce something that's going to sound really cool. Like, oh, yeah, we're going to do OutRun and it's going to be 3D graphics. It's going to be super cool. Or they're going to be like, oh, we're going to do Crazy Taxi. Another one that they should have done.
Yeah,
like
2 years ago. They haven't resurrected that old horse.
Yeah, I will. That's funny because right after they had released Super Monkey Ball at the launch of the App Store, I said, you guys should do Crazy Taxi. Like, it's a perfect device for it. And they're like, oh, yeah, well, we'll look into it. It's like, oh, my God, it's a no-brainer. Do that. Do a texting of the dead.
Yeah.
Like, they have all this stuff that they could do some, you know. But the problem is now a lot of that stuff, it's not going to do very much because they waited too long. So it's like, you know, if they do Crazy Taxi, I worry, like, is it going to be all that exciting because we've kind of had some of those games before? You know, we have similar games already available on the App Store.
Do you think it's actually because it was a Dreamcast title, not a Mega Drive title, and they couldn't fit it in the
emulator? Exactly. Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. That's why I'm worried, because I don't think, aside from what they'd plop out on that emulator, they don't... The only exception have been the two games you said, and I just remembered the other, and that's Choo Choo Rocket. Choo Choo Rocket was well done too. But I hope I'm wrong. I hope that whatever this game is, it's really good, because I would like to see them do well. They have a lot of great properties, you know, and they could do well by them.
Shenmue. Shenmue on the iPhone, that would be brilliant. That would actually work as well. Half the time you like just wander around at like a snail's pace doing menial labor and asking about where sailors are, and then the rest of it's QuickTime events which actually work on the iPhone pretty well. So I mean, why haven't they put Shenmue on here, damn it?
Anyway. So everybody cross, that ain't gonna happen. But let's you know, now I feel bad. Now I feel like I've been dumping on Sega. So I think that I'm gonna cross my fingers and I'm gonna be optimistic and hopeful that 2.5 weeks from now, when they debut their new game, if the rumor's true, that it's something fun. So now on to the bad news that's actually good news. This week, THQ announced that they have basically, for all intents and purposes, shuttled their wireless division and have basically sold it off to a company called 24MOS. This is comes after a long line of sort of bad news for THQ Wireless. They let go of a lot of people. They stopped putting out a lot of games. And then now they're essentially, you know, been sold off and are being run as part of another organization that will then make games under the THQ label. So it's kind of an organizational change, but in reality, they basically got sold off. So while that's bad news, it actually kind of puts because THQ Wireless had the license for Star Wars, so they were the ones that were making all of the Star Wars apps and games, which were not very good. For example, the tower defense game, what was that called? Star Wars Battle of Hoth.
Oh, yeah.
Not good. Great idea, bad game. There was Force Unleashed, which was okay but could have been way better, and they didn't even do anything for Force Unleashed 2. So with this sort of business move, with this new merging, that license is kind of kind of in jeopardy. So that could actually be a good thing, because if THQ loses that license, that could open the way for a different publisher to actually pick it up and do some really cool games, like maybe Gameloft. Gameloft could pick that up, use their engine, do a great job with it. Gameloft has done pretty well by a lot of licensed properties, like Spider-Man, for example. They've also done some bad ones like Iron Man 2. But on the whole, they've actually done really well with licensed properties. So if they could get a hold of Star Wars, or even if EA could, they could do some really good things. So I'm certainly watching this and seeing what shakes down from it.
But Tracy, I kind of got the impression that what THQ Wireless was selling was its non-iPhone stuff. It was still going to kind of keep its hand in on the smartphone stuff and was kind of getting rid of its non-smartphone stuff. But that I may have got the wrong end of the stick a little bit there.
Yeah, no, that's what, you know,
because
there
was some phrase in the PR thing, wasn't
it
there?
It was extremely ambiguous, and that I was very careful when I was talking with Rumor Miner about this, because this sounds like they're selling off of the sort of the distribution side of their mobile business. But it's so vaguely worded, because this company that they've sold the division to essentially was the quote from their executive was like, oh, we're really excited to be able to push a lot of content and to be able to do this and that. And it's like, well, THQ doesn't have any development resources because they got rid of their internal studio in Japan, Spain.
Oh, they had Finland as well.
Right. Exactly. They've basically let all of those people go. They've done, I guess, really whether or not the actual division is completely sold off and they're not going to necessarily be handling content internally is less of an issue than what sort of do licensors like LucasArts feel comfortable with that relationship? And I think that's where the doubt is. I don't know, and the Rumor Miner couldn't articulate for me whether or not there was, you know, clear unrest in that relationship and that that licensing agreement was finished. It sounded more as though this is they're in a bad spot. And certainly from the reviews they've been getting, and you know, for their games, particularly the Star Wars ones I refer to, are bad. I mean, I've not found anybody who said that they're like, oh yeah, the THQ's done really well by the license.
And
not
pretty much
the case whatsoever.
Pretty much all those ones had been third parties as well, didn't they? Like the Trench, the Star Wars Trench Runner was a third party one. The augmented reality one was a third party one. So it wasn't, they weren't doing those internally. They were just with independent developers. So obviously you kind of get less control in that situation. Although Tracy, obviously the Rumor Miner told me but didn't tell you that they were looking to do some interesting innovative stuff with the Star Wars license and existing iPhone games. So like brands that are being created on iPhone, say Tower Defense games might be combined with the Star Wars brand. But that was, to be honest, he told me that a couple of months ago. So that may have been affected by this move and may not be no longer be happening. But yeah.
I don't know. I think The more that we're talking about this, the more I'm realizing that it's completely unclear what they're doing. the announcement was so nonspecific. And I don't think they've been very, I think part of the problem is they have not been very clear at all, not just with regard to this business transaction, but their strategy in general. What are they? I mean, for the last 2 years, they've been laying people off and shutting studios down and saying, well, we're really pushing content. But it's like, well, what content? You mean the content that's really that nobody likes, or the content like the Falcon Gunner, which sold well, but was, you know, only for the fact that it had the Star Wars name attached to it, not because it was an actually good product, you know, or the Trench Run, which they launched, which was absolutely atrocious, and then had to go back and update it and then basically try to, you know, do a big mea culpa, like, please buy it. We fixed it. So I think, you know, for a licensor like LucasArts that is really, you know, sensitive to product quality, you know, I think that puts that relationship in jeopardy.
I mean, I guess the thing, their license with LucasArts will, you know, will run for a certain period of time, at which point presumably either party would have the chance to renegotiate or find someone else. So, I mean, yeah, I agree. If I was LucasArts and why would I renegotiate with THQ? One, they haven't got any money, and two, they put out terrible games. So, yeah, we'll see.
Ah, before we go into the final rumor, I would like to give the rumor miner some recognition. He, just broke across the wire is the announcement of a new massively multiplayer game from Spacetime Studios, which is the company that did Pocket Legends for iPhone and iPad. And several months back, when Pocket Legends had just launched, the rumor miner had communicated a rumor about their next game being a space-based massively multiplayer online game, and that has just been announced 3 minutes ago. Spacetime Studios, Black Star sci-fi MMO. So if there's any doubt that you guys need to pay attention to the rumor miner, there you go. So the final rumor is very exciting. I know you. Anybody who has an iPhone has probably played Flight Control. If you haven't played Real Racing 2, it was personally, I thought it was the best game of last year. It was got a 10 out of 10 from us. And the next project, the next title, the next big game from FireMint is going to be announced at GDC. Brand new, not a sequel. It's not Flight Control 2. It is not another real racing game. It is a brand new property that's going to be announced at the beginning of March.
Real Flight Control.
Be more imaginative, Will. Come on.
What? Flight Control Racing? No, I'm sure
that's
it's. I'm sure it'd be. I'm sure it'd be more imaginative than I can think of. That sounds good. Do you have it? Does the rumor miner? Well, did the rumor miner tell you anything about what it could be, or is it just completely new?
It is. How can I say this? I can't without completely giving it away.
I mean, it's kind of interesting because they've done racing games and Flight Control, haven't they? They're not a studio that's got a long history of doing stuff, so it will be fascinating to see what they
got. The Puzzle Quest guys now, though.
They have got the Puzzle Quest guys. That is true.
And they were working on a project before they got bought. So it could be actually because they'll fall under FireMint now. So mm-hmm. Could be Puzzle Real Racing Quest. Control.
Well, there was that because what's Infinite Interactive had their game, like you were saying, Will. But remember, FireMint was working on two titles before that acquisition, neither of which had been announced. Now, we had reported that. When was that? I think it was WWDC, and I had met with them, and we weren't allowed to talk about specifics, but we were allowed to say, oh yeah, they're working on stuff. Mm. So I'm not sure which of those three titles it is. It could be, who knows, maybe it could be something completely different. It could be a fourth title that they decided to collaborate on when they move forward with the merger.
A casual match 3 game.
Jesus.
See, this is why I don't design games. Well, that's exciting news. I'm looking forward to that. And that's at GDC, which is in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, keep your ears peeled, listeners. So I'm sure we'll have the news as it breaks. Anyway, I think is that the last of the rumor miner scribblings on that note I could see recording. Okay. Well, we better get out of here. before that trans-dimensional wildebeest comes back from John's microphone socket, which I'll have edited out, so that wouldn't have made any sense. Not that a trans-dimensional wildebeest is something that normally pops up, but anyway, let's go to the what we've been playing films fields.
What we've been playing.
Right. who's up first this week? I think as he's been away for 2 weeks now, and I think Tracy should go first.
Sure, that's good. That's fine, because I've played NBA Jam the last couple of days, which is the week's big release, I suppose, which tells you how big of a release, how big of a week it's been in iPhone and iPod Touch games. It's actually okay. It's gave it a 7. Reviews up on the site now, so go ahead and check it out if you haven't already. If you're expecting just ridiculous arcade basketball gameplay, then NBA Jam will definitely make you happy. It's pretty faithful to the older games. Lots of ridiculous slam dunks and really good defensive mechanics. You can shove other players. You can steal the ball quite frequently. The steal button in the lower left right corner of the screen is very effective. And one of the things I actually really like about on the defensive side is that blocking really makes a difference. One of the things that kind of frustrated me about the simulated basketball games that EA's released on iPhone and iPod Touch is that blocking was really hard. And that is not the case in NBA Jam. There are two modes of play. There's a quick one-off play now / exhibition mode where you just are basically dumped into a game. And there's also a campaign. Now the campaign is a little bit of a, I wouldn't call it a campaign in the traditional sense, because, you know, you think campaign is like, oh, you're going to be able to upgrade your player stats, or you're going to be able to, you know, there's like a tournament structure or something. There's actually some like bigger structure involved with the campaign. In reality, it's just several dozen games that you play in a row. That's it. You unlock each game individually, one after the other. It's very linear. There's no stats to upgrade. There's no mini games, no training, nothing. So it's very, very basic. The bad news is that there are only two modes. There is no multiplayer, which I think is a completely egregious oversight, especially considering egregious.
It's not used enough, that word, is it?
No.
I like that
word.
What
does it mean, Tracy? continue. It's good. Yes, egregious.
There's no multiplayer, which I think is really just, I don't get it. I really just don't get it. For NBA Live and NBA Elite 11, which just came out right before the start of the new year, multiplayer was absent, and there was a huge sort of there was a lot of criticism. I certainly complained about it, is why is there not Bluetooth multiplayer? It's a sports game. This is exactly the sort of game that you want to be able to sit next to a buddy on the couch and play against each other. And that's missing. That's even truer for NBA Jam, where the whole concept is you want to compete for dunks with a friend. So the fact that you can't do that is it just is really odd. There's a missed opportunity, because it is such a fun game, and because the single player campaign is so lackluster and so linear, you know, it's the sort of game that you want to pick up for 5 minutes and put down, and it would be great to do that with a friend. And so I think its long-term value, you know, whether or not you keep it on your device for more than a few days is kind of questionable, because it doesn't have a good selection of modes. So if they could update it with multiplayer, even just Bluetooth, I mean, Game Center would be great. I would really love to see EA actually use Game Center. I don't think that they will. I think they have some business issue that is making them not support Game Center. But if they could update it with multiplayer, I think it would have boosted the score a point. Because at its core, it's a good game. I just think it needs more features.
Do you know who developed it, Tracy? Do you know?
You know, I don't. Let me. It's a great question.
Often they don't say. I mean, I just wonder I know a lot of their stuff is done by third parties as well, but no, it is. Their attitude to games are weird. You kind of think. I mean, it's not, you know, it's $4.99. It's not expensive. It's not cheap either. You kind of think, you know, not to have any multiplayer at all.
I think it's you know, it's a tricky question with multiplayer, because I know a lot of people, I honestly am not a huge multiplayer gamer. Mm. I prefer single player games. But when I look at a game, when I look at a sports game, you know, they're inherently competitive. They're built to be played, you know, it's, you know, team-based sports like football and American football and basketball are a bunch of guys playing against each other. So it naturally lends itself to multiplayer. And so when you, it's particularly when you say, okay, you know, look, it's only going to be $5. It's only going to be $10. We can't do a dynasty mode. We don't want to do a lot of these feature heavy single player modes because we're trying to keep the price down. Mm. Then give us multiplayer. Offset the lack of single player modes with a multiplayer mode, whether it's Bluetooth local or if it's online via Game Center or some other proprietary platform. That gives it so much more value, and it enables, you know, because you play through a campaign, you know, you play through that campaign, you know, you're kind of done with the game.
Yeah.
So, and it doesn't, I think, you know, in terms of cost from a development perspective, it's because there are so many tools out there to be able to do Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and online gaming now on iPhone and iPod Touch, it's not that expensive. You know, it's not like when iPhone just launched and all of that had to be built in-house.
Yeah, definitely.
Hmm.
I mean, I think on the iPhone, that's kind of where the big publishers, I mean, not so much gamers, I suppose, but the big publishers, they don't often show a passion for it, and I think it partly is because they're outsourcing to someone, so they're going, this is the budget for it. The company's going, well, you know, it's not the game we really want to make. We're doing it, it's a work for hire for EA, so they build their profit margin into it. If someone was doing it for their own, oh, we're going to make the best basketball game ever on iPhone, I mean, they might go bust afterwards a bit. They'd take a year to do it, and they'd just shove it full of everything, wouldn't they? I mean, that's kind of what the indie guys, the successful ones, do really well. It's their complete passion to make this the best game ever. And even if it's, you know, if they were doing a basketball game, they might base it on NBA Jam. Obviously, not going to get the license, but they would, you know, that would be their competitive edge. Whereas EA go, we got the license. You know, I don't know, I haven't played it. So I'm sure it's a good game, but it's just, in some ways, the passion in that fullest feature set mm-hmm. isn't there.
The only stuff that I've seen come out of EA that has had that sort of passion, that real good quality, is the stuff that's been coming out of Iron Monkey Studios. They've done some really great work, and I was actually talking with EA right after Dead Space, and we were talking about the review that we had posted, and they're you know, they were happy, they were glad that it was getting such positive buzz. And I said to them, you keep using Iron, I mean, you know, use them as much as you possibly can, because they're doing so well by these EA franchises, whether it's, you know, Mirror's Edge, which was a great adaptation that felt very unique and very well tailored to iPhone, to Need for Speed, which in a very competitive genre where you have, you know, real racing that, you know, casts a shadow over the, you know, every exactly. single racing game that hits the genre, that hits the App Store, they nailed it. They did a really great racing game. You know, and Dead Space, you know, I think there was a lot of attention particularly placed on Dead Space because, you know, for the last couple of years, everybody's been kind of wondering, can these sort of, you know, more core experiences work on these devices? And I think they proved that it can. So I'm hopeful that they can continue to give Iron Monkey the creative sort of breathing room that they need to be able to create those experiences, because those have been the best EA games.
And equally, I mean, you know, Iron Monkey are a fully owned EA team who, they're not just doing piecemeal work. They're like, right, this is your schedule throughout the year. You're hiring these guys. They're your guys. They're building this, you know, those are the guys who should be, you know, that's what Gameloft have. Gameloft, okay, they have like 15 studios around the world, but they're all in-house studios. They don't use outsourcing people at all. They don't use third parties. And I kind of think that, you know, you're right, that kind of a bit of that kind of quality does show through.
So who's next? John, you want to go next? What you're playing?
Will doesn't like going last.
I don't go. I like going last because it leads to an uncomfortable silence while I prepare myself to link. Yes, sorry. I've been playing this week on the iPad You're Cubetastic.
Cubetastic.
Cubetastic. Whoa, look how many cubes we've got. Yes. The title... Sorry, I got to clear my throat. The title isn't too far off because it's got quite a lot of cubes. It's not fantastic, but it's pretty good. It's a puzzle game, sort of loosely based around the Rubik's Cube, where you have to trace a safe passage for your light to travel across the surface of this cube. You do this by twisting and rotating it, as you do a Rubik's Cube, so that the coloured squares match up and you can lead it to the exit zone, which is all fairly simple. It gets very hard. The cube increases in size, and and you get different colours, and you get colour switching squares. You get hover exits that you don't move of the cube. You can't move the row or column that the light stands on, so you've got to plan a little bit in the head as well. And of course, it's three dimensional, so you've got to rotate around the cube and look at where all of the basically it's a lot more complicated than it first sounds. It's a pretty good game. It's not the most well presented. It's quite decent though. I mean, the actual presentation is quite minimalist and quite easy to see, which is always helpful because you've got to rotate around the cube a lot. And I found it quite enjoyable, really. I thought it was quite good. If you're in the market for a sort of a tough and quite an original little puzzle game, I'd say it's definitely one to get. It's got a lot of content as well. I mean, it took me hours to just get through the first sort of half of the game. That's including getting stuck, of course, because they do get hard. But I mean, the only real sort of annoying things is the controls they're not quite right. It never quite knows when you're trying to rotate or when you're trying to move the vertical or horizontal part of the cube. I think partially that's the fault of the camera, which is positioned for clarity of view rather than clarity of movement. So you'll often find yourself wasting rotations. You're not actually penalized as such for rotating massively, but it does affect the score, etc. And, you know, it's just kind of annoying when you have to then flip your cube back around like four times because it's gone off on one of its mental. You've decided to rotate sessions, and then you've got to flip it back again to get it back to where you were. And the other issue, this is more about the start of the game. It gets lesser as you get on to the really tough puzzles, but at the start, the difficulty curve is a little bit all over the place. It'll introduce a new concept, get harder, get quite hard, and then it will drop way back down when it introduces a new concept on top of that. Which, I mean, that's fair enough. I can see why they did that. They want you to learn, you know, to get used to using the concept before introducing a new one. But it does often feel like all of a sudden, having spent like, say, I spent about 15 minutes on one of the puzzles quite early on. The next four I completed without even really looking at the screen. And it was kind of like, what's going on now? Because it didn't feel very smooth. And then, of course, it went incredibly hard for a puzzle. And then it went right back down again. And it was kind of like, wah. So, yeah, those are my niggles with it. But other than that, I think it's pretty good. It's a decent puzzle game. And if you've got an iPad, check it out. Cubetastic. It's Cubetastic. John.
Yeah, so I've been playing a game amazingly this week, after not playing many last week, not playing many this week either. So it's a game that's not out yet. I think it actually should be out maybe early next week, called RoboSockets. And it's like a cross between Tetris and Pipes. And there was something else I could bet it did that I've forgotten about. So basically what it is you have these kind of like charming robot chaps who drop down the screen. In a Tetris type manner, although they're just kind of single square blocks, and they have the potential to have kind of sockets on each of their four corners. Obviously, most of them don't. So what you have to do is you have to build up. You have to kind of, you know, move them when they fall down to build up connections, and you have to kind of like a match. I think it's a match four. Yeah. So you have to get four of them connected up. Five of them connected up. Yeah. Four. One, two, three. Four of them connected up. It's been a long day. And then they disappear. And it's, as I say, it's not the most. I mean, I think there is some originality in the concept. It's five. Get five of them connected. Sorry.
What's going on?
I'm actually playing it, and then I can't actually count when I'm playing because I'm overloaded. And you kind of you build up kind of special powers, and you could build up kind of bombs and things that change the way their sockets move and stuff. But it's just for the small amount that I've been playing it, I've found it very easy to get into and enjoyable. So that's what I've been playing.
Yeah. Well. So okay.
What do you want to know? What should I be saying then?
No, that's fine.
Is that not exciting enough for you?
No,
oh, magnets come. I've got a magnet. Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, and a magnet comes down. It kind of pushes them all around. Yeah.
I liked it. okay, I think we should draw this extra long podcast to a close. I guess it's the sort of karma of racing through last week's one. Yes, so all that's left for me. I don't think we've had any questions. I haven't actually asked questions. Last week. If you do have any questions, of course, we're very welcome to answer it. Or any comments, indeed. Do send it as a comment at the bottom of this article. Yes, that's the end for this week. All that's left for me to say is thanks for...
Sorry, Will, just before you go, it's even by the time the podcast comes out, there will still be opportunities for people to enter the Game Loft Galaxy S competition that ends at midnight of 1 minute to midnight on Friday, so you have to go and retweet stuff. You have to go and look that up on the website, but you could win. There are four Galaxy S Android top of the range Android phones to be won.
They're nice.
Yeah,
they're very nice actually.
So this iPhone and iPad gaming podcast is going to be brought to a close now.
should I not mention Android?
Not welcome around these parts. No, it's fine. I'll hurt you later. Yes, so thank you very much to to my co-conspirators on this podcast, Tracy Erickson.
Bye-bye.
And John Jordan.
Good night.
And it's good night from me as well. Good night or good morning. Bye-bye.